Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, special series recorded live at the Paris School of Economics CEPR Policy Forum 2025. My name is Tim Phillips. In this episode, how good are large language models at doing our jobs? It's the second of our episodes from the PSE CEPR Forum, dealing with the potential of AI to change our working lives. Last time, David Autor joined me for an eye-opening discussion about how AI might create what he called mass expertise. Since we all became aware of large language models, LLMs, scientists have been attempting to evaluate how good they are at performing these expert tasks that David was talking about. The results of those tests show us whether LLMs can be useful complements to us, as David hoped, or even replacements, as many of us fear. But setting or grading a test to decide whether an LLM can do a real-life job, rather than just solve an abstract problem, isn't easy to do. Maria Del Rio Cianona, a computer scientist at UCL, visited the conference to tell us about her innovative and slightly mind-boggling work in progress, in which she asks an LLM to set a tricky workplace exam and then tells another LLM to take the test. Oh, and the tests are graded by, you're right, another large language model. So Maria, welcome.
Hi Tim, thank you for having me today.
Maria, this is a really interesting piece of work. How did it come about? What was the idea behind it?
You know, there were several stages. I would say one of the first one was around a year ago. I was at a conference and I met David Autor, we of course know, and he asked me this question: what do you think in 5 years AI will be able to do that it can't do now? And what do you think AI still won't be able to do? That question stayed in my mind, and I talked with my co-author, Johanna Einsiedler, who has done a lot of the heavy lifting. And we had this idea, but it never really came into something until Anthony Korinek put us in touch with the Brookings Institution, and they wanted to commission a paper on this idea. So this was around February, March this year. And basically, that's what really pushed this work to get it going.
Because you're not an economist, are you?
Yeah, so I'm not an economist by training and like, or by formal training. While my PhD was in mathematics, I spent most of my time at the Institute for New Economic Thinking at Oxford. It's been a while since I've tried to get into economics.
It'll still be there for you. So for this research, you're investigating how good large language models, LLMs, that we all know now, like DeepSeek, ChatGPT, are. How good are they at what?
Yeah, we wanted to come up with a way to see how good they are, how fast they're progressing. And we focused on occupations we thought are highly exposed, and we have some sort of intuition of how they work. So we focused on finance and business, computer and mathematics, and management occupations. And we took a really small subset of tasks where we could actually do some tests in there.
I see. So it's how good they are at doing the sort of tasks that people are doing today. I can see how that's pretty handy for employers. They're going to like this. But is it also useful information for policymakers? Is it useful information for individuals?
I hope so. I think one of the ways this is positive is that it allows us humans to know what our comparative advantage is and what are the things we can focus. It also allows policymakers to redeploy things like retraining or maybe more education purposes. We're also really working on trying to understand how these capabilities are being shaped. And David Autor talked about this, trying to get AI to be more complementary. So if we know what AI is good at, then we can focus our effort better on how it can complement us.
So if you're evaluating an LLM on its skill in performing a complex activity, then I imagine this raises some quite difficult questions. The concept of doing a high skill but complex activity, it's a difficult question to ask and answer, isn't it?
What's complexity to some extent, right? And we can come up with some ad hoc definitions. And what we'd really try to see is, well, maybe let's just test it and let's just see what it can do, what it can't do. Because maybe what it's complex for an LLM is not complex to a person. And maybe what's complex to a person is not complex to an LLM. So if you let it speak to us, then we can start understanding these machines better.
A lot of economists now, including David, have looked at an occupation as a bundle of tasks and tried to analyze which occupations were exposed to automation by how good the automation is at doing any of these tasks. Does that fully serve your purpose?
I would say that sort of inspired our work in a sense, that if you see an occupation as a bundle of tasks and you want to know what things AI can't do and what it should be done for a person. Now, I would also say that this work allows us to know, in a way, what are the occupations of LLMs. So if we think an occupation was made naturally about those tasks that fit well within a person's head. So for example, mathematicians or let's say computer scientists are likely to be both good in math and coding, perhaps not so good at speaking, right? Well, for example, if you're a singer, you're probably good at singing and dancing. So there's two things that bundle up together well in a person's head. What's that for LLM? So what are the things that bundle well within an LLM that they're good at both things?
I get it. Now, also, when you look at the reporting of LLMs, it's very often reported as scaling laws because this seems to increase all the time. Does this get close to answering the questions that you're asking?
Yeah, we have like Moore's law, right? So basically, compute power gets cheaper different ways across time, right? Exponentially cheaper. And with scaling laws, we say with data, compute, and model size, LLMs are getting better. But it's hard to measure, right? So first they would test on sort of next word prediction. But by now that's very much saturated because LLMs speak quite well. Then we started doing these sort of benchmarks of how good are they at math or, you know, at history. And it's nice, but it's not economic value. It's not like how cheap are computers getting. So the idea was to try and do a benchmark that we could map to economic value through also what we know it's economically valuable, which is our work tasks, things we actually do at work.
Maria mentioned Anton Korenek, an economist who has been a pioneer in identifying the potential of LLMs to automate problem-solving tasks at work. Follow us to listen to two episodes featuring Anton. Our Workless Future, from September 2022, and AI is Reshaping Economic Research, from March 2023.
Okay, so let's have a look at how you tested the LLMs instead. I believe that you set them exams, is that correct?
Yeah, sometimes you say academics can get out of their own job. So maybe I've designed too many exams for students. So the idea was to make a practical exam. And I should say it's not a knowledge exam. It's not whether they know history or not, because they're pretty good at that.
Yeah.
It's more about, can they do my taxes? Can they file in this report? Can they calculate a price model for something? So it's about actually doing things. And here what we did is basically an LLM system or AI agent system that had different components. Some will do sort of the materials. That means like in an exam, you'll say, oh, I want you to fill in my taxes here. So that's like a spreadsheet so that you give to it. And we also had to know what the tools were, right? So do you need a calculator? Do you just need writing? Does the LLM need coding? So that was the first stage. And then through several ways, we simulated the materials and tools. And then they generate the instructions. And at the end, you also have a system that evaluates it. So one thing we ask is, first, the LLM creates an overview. So you say, when you're creating the materials, tell me any trick question you'll put in there. To the LLM solving the exam, you only give the materials, but to the LLM that will sort of evaluate, you also give this information and basically what are the trick questions. So this is how you actually are able to also systematically evaluate the LLM models, because then we can have, for example, Claude 3.7 do the exams, have GPT-4o solve it, but also there's an LLM evaluator that evaluates or grades the exam. But you can actually even also have Claude 3.7 have the full exam and send it to Claude 3.7, but without sort of this information about the trick questions. And what we actually find is obviously Claude 3.7 does fairly good in the exams of Claude 3.7, but not perfectly, because it doesn't have this background information we gave to the evaluator.
Huh. What sort of things are the exams about? Give me some topics.
Right. So one would be the one about taxes, right? So we said fill the tax form, and it gave several scenarios, you know, for a single taxpayer in the US, for a married taxpayer in the US. And then it created some materials like here's John Smith, here in this amount of money throughout this time. These are sort of the rules of the US. Now try to calculate it. There was the simple one, but within that exam, there's like several to-do lists. And then it had to compute the one of a married couple. So it could get a bit more complicated. And this is how actually the score is between 0 and 100. Mm-hmm. So if it only gone one case right, then it would maybe score 30. And if it got two, maybe 60, and all of them, maybe it would go up to 100.
Were there things that you really wanted to examine these LLMs on, but you couldn't think out a way to do it?
I think the biggest challenge is evaluating LLMs on online web search. Not because they can't do it. We know DeepSeek can do it, but it's hard to do in a controlled environment. So I would have to sort of build the internet to know the answer for it to then to do it correctly.
Okay, so which models did you test?
Right. So at this very moment, we're, of course, working on expanding for Anthropic models, OpenAI, Google models, and DeepSeek. We are hoping to expand to open source. And within those three, we did different models. So, you know, ChatGPT 3.5, 4.0, and 0.3 mini, I believe. Similar for Claude, we did several of them, and Gemini. So we did the three-tier system. So we did 10 in total.
So for people who don't really know about the difference between models, what is that? They're not just one model that follows another, are they?
There's the different companies that do them. Every 6 months, you'll have someone claiming that Google is better than OpenAI or Anthropic is the best one, but they're all competing. But within each company, you have models that are progressive, improving, right? So you would have Claude 3.0, 3.5, 3.7, 4. And there you can say that's sort of what they think it's better. But between comparing the latest version of Claude or OpenAI, it's hard to disentangle which one's better.
And so to the results.
Yeah, well, the first thing we found is that when we were trying to generate these exams, it's very difficult to do them precisely because at this very moment, we're only focusing on text and spreadsheets. We're not giving them code, which we are working on, and we think it will massively increase the tasks we can evaluate. We only focus on those. We actually can focus only on a very small subset of tasks. In these occupations, we can only do between 5 and 10% of their tasks that we can test. On that subset, the performance is not great. If you think that to automate something, you'd need 99% accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, GPT 3.5 would score around 30%. The latest models score between 60 and 70. So much better.
Mm-hmm.
Still far from that 99%. Probably good to be complementary across those tasks.
As you say, then every few months, we have a new greatest model. Which subjects do they end up doing well in?
They're actually better in management tasks than in computer science and mathematics.
Hmm.
There's a big caveat there, though. We're already filtering tasks for those things that we can evaluate. Probably a lot of the face-to-face person things that come in management are things we really don't evaluate. And the other thing is, at the moment, we're not giving LLMs access to code or calculators. Of course, even if they only have their text capabilities, they're pretty good at doing a bit of math. But yeah, we've not put them in a calculator. So that's also a bit of the bias why we might not see them being as good as they should be.
As you say, they've reached the point now where they're scoring about 60 or 70%, twice as much as they were scoring 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, as the expert in this, are you impressed by this rate of progress?
I guess yes and no, right? To some extent, all of the benchmarks say they're getting better and better. So I would have expected them to improve. I am surprised to see that they are getting better. I have to say the thing I'm most surprised at was that this whole pipeline of an LLM make an exam for another LLM worked. I was quite skeptical. Like, and you know, this is where I really, you know, Brookings Institution putting a contract on us was like, at that point we were like, oh, we actually have to do this thing. Yeah, so what I really want to do is as soon as we start putting tool use, so get the LLM to play with a calculator, let it play with image generation so we can do a PowerPoint presentation and things like that, I really want to see how much that will scale their capabilities. And I think that's where we might be impressed of how fast they're progressing.
Did you at all attempt to get the sorts of exams that people in these professions do anyway and give them to the LLM?
We haven't yet. We should. It's also because a lot of these exams for example, in academia, we test with a lot of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
And that's...
It's a bit easy for them.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. In school, you learn the theory and then you actually learn the practice once you go and work. And we kind of know the LLMs might already know the theory. We can ask an LLM, how would you dig a hole or can you dig a hole? And it would probably say yes and give me really good instructions on how it would dig a hole. But I would still have to dig it myself.
Yeah. If you were the sort of person who had a job digging holes, you'd know how to dig a hole already, probably. So from this, can we extrapolate? Because if we say it's made this sort of progress over the last 2 or 3 years, what do you think for the next 2 or 3?
I would say not yet. I'm a bit skeptical, but that's the whole point of this. The whole point is when we ask this question of what can AI do in 5 years or so, we can ask Silicon Valley and they will say everything. We can ask other experts like Darren Acemoglu and they will say not much. But if you look at the literature of what makes forecasting good, what you should do is have model builds, state your priors clearly, do your research, and do small updates on your beliefs that are data-driven. It's much better to do small and frequent than large updates on your beliefs infrequently. So what one shouldn't do is open the newspaper one day and say, Darren Acemoglu said AI doesn't matter, and then the 6 months after read, AI is taking over the world. Maybe what we can do is have sort of these exams that are progressing little by little. They also allow us to understand what things LLMs are good at, so we can start mapping this space of possibilities for LLMs themselves. So the exams are not perfect, right? Like I looked at some of them, they're good, they're decent, they're not perfect. But I also think they're going to get better as LLMs get better. And that's what makes this project nice. It's something that is not going to become obsolete like so many tests. Yes, now LLMs can pass the bar. Okay, what do we do now? So you sort of put that into the LLM. And as soon as more tasks get created, AI is changing the economy. We'll see that. I'm in no way saying, oh, I align with any of the Silicon Valley or more Darren Acemoglu view. If anything, I'm only stating my uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is do a method that helps us combat that uncertainty in a systematized way.
And so with the rate of change we have at the moment, you could quite possibly be updating your beliefs slightly every week at the moment.
Yes, perhaps. It does require some work and some money. It's not too expensive. I should also say I have an excellent collaborator. So Johanna Einsiedler, a lot of praise should go to her and errors should be to me.
Maria, it's very interesting talking about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Maria's work is currently, well, work in progress. It's commissioned by the Brookings Institution, and so look out for publications in the near future.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, AI in low and middle income countries.